Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womax and Friends. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. Today's guest's work is both powerful and impactful in creating a lot of hope and freedom in our world. Today we have Sabrina Dorman Andrew. She is the founder and executive director of New Creation here in Harrisonburg, Virginia. What they do is they are a faith-based nonprofit based right here in the Shenandoah Valley that is creatively counteracting human trafficking with a local heart and a global approach. From turning a former porn shop into a place of hope to help creating fair-paying jobs around the world, Sabrina and her team are doing amazing work. They are doing good, loving boldly, and making freedom and hope possible. This is amazing. It's so awesome to have you on the show today. Welcome, Sabrina.
Thank you, Dawn, and thanks for coming to the shop and letting us shoot it here.
I know. This is what we have. A lot of things behind us and in front of us and to the right of us.
And maybe above us.
And I can't wait to get into all of that. But real quick, laughers, I did want to tell you that we have exciting news that you can get a free audiobook from Audible. And that link is right here in the show notes when you listen or after you listen to this podcast. And when you get a free audiobook, that means you can listen to someone else besides me in between episodes, which is really wonderful. And I do get a commission for that, but that helps the work of the podcast and all the amazing things we do. And guests we get to meet, like Sabrina today. I have been so intrigued by your work here. You've been doing this 11 years now?
Almost 12, yeah.
That is incredible. I read a little bit about what sparked your work here, and I understand that your work didn't start in this building. It started over a dining room table with you and your husband.
Yeah, and it was a great way for me to force my husband to take me to dinner a lot.
At your dining room table?
No, he had to take me out to eat because the dining room table was filled.
Oh, okay. I like how creative you were about that.
Yeah. And so our shop started in our home. And okay. It started very small with one group of women we were serving in northern Uganda. And back then, this was 2012, nobody was really talking about the issue of human trafficking. And so we were really intrigued about the issue itself and really compelled to do something about it. We just didn't really understand what. So it started very small. We were creating jobs with women in Uganda, selling their products, telling the story that when you shop, there's a story behind the products that you're buying. And we wanted to make sure the story was a good one. And so we sold their items and made sure that the women were being paid fair wage. But also it was really important to make sure their kids went to school. So a lot of the funding went to the women and then also the generation behind them.
How did you find out about this? Because that's how you started, but there must have been a pull on your heartstrings moment.
You know, it was actually a pull on my husband's heartstrings. He heard a woman come. She actually shared at our church about the work she was doing in Uganda. She was supposed to be there for a couple week mission trip.
Yeah.
And she met this group of women who had come out of human trafficking but did not have a way forward. And so she, instead of being there for a couple weeks, she sold all of her stuff and she moved. She was in Uganda, I think 8 years total. And so she was working in Uganda and really just, she came home to spread the message and fundraise and get people to help. And so he came home and said, I really feel like you would be passionate about this. You should look it up. And it was just a rat card, you know, that you get everywhere.
Yeah.
I never thought about a rat card changing my entire life.
But it did.
Yeah. And so I started researching what she did. Eventually I reached out and said, hey, I don't necessarily feel called to move to Uganda, but what can I do here in the States? And that's how it happened. She said, you know, honestly, a big piece of the puzzle is having products that are sold, and it's very hard to move products in northern Uganda. And so she would just ship boxes and boxes of jewelry to my house. I can still remember the smell. So they make paper beads.
Mm-hmm.
And so they take newspaper and strip it down, and then they dye it and roll it and lacquer it. And this lacquer has a very distinct smell.
Yeah.
And I could remember, like, I remember when we started that smell in my house of like, oh, it smells like freedom for women.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
I bet you have learned a lot about human trafficking in 12 years, and some of it has probably surprised you, mm-hmm. I imagine. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think the reality, too, was when we started, we were really focused on the global issue first.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're talking, we didn't even have a standalone sex trafficking bill in our state when we started New Creation.
Really?
And people were really not understanding that sex trafficking is something happening here.
Yeah. I wouldn't think that.
And still.
Immediately, I mean, I wouldn't.
Yeah. Still people are like, that can't happen. And so I have learned a lot. I have also been shocked at how prevalent it is everywhere, not just here, but if there are people, likely there is trafficking happening, but people don't recognize what it looks like. The very first case of trafficking here was in my hometown of Elkton. I met a young girl, and I was sharing at her church about the issue of trafficking and talking about what it looks like, and at the end she said, I didn't know it had a name. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, that's my story. And her story was her mom was her trafficker, which
wow.
is really quite common. About 40% of child sex trafficking in the U.S. is perpetrated by a family member. Mm. Those are things that I, you know, and I was a mom and I kept thinking, how is it possible that this is happening in my community and that family members are involved? And so that's really what compelled the work that we do in schools, is recognizing how many students are in our community
mm-hmm.
that are not protected, because we expect these conversations to happen around a dining room table.
Yeah.
And we expect families to educate their children. But what happens if they're the ones that are selling them and profiting? And so that's the work we do in the schools, is one of my favorite things that we get to do.
How do you recognize this, and why? What is the motivation for family members to sell their children into trafficking?
Often with trafficking, you know, I always say human trafficking, the reality is traffickers prey on a vulnerability and exploit a vulnerability. Well, children are our most vulnerable. So that's what very much is the vulnerability for children. What we often see is where there's drug abuse and addiction. Mm-hmm. And poverty and lack of opportunity. That doesn't matter if it's in our country or another country. Those two factors often do compel people to do the unthinkable. In my mind, I'm thinking, how does this happen and why?
Mm-hmm.
The other side is, you know, human trafficking is the fastest growing criminal industry in the world.
That is crazy.
It is globally. It's estimated to make about $236 billion annually.
Wow.
So it is incredibly profitable. And so the reality of trafficking, too, that we sometimes forget is it is a business. Mm-hmm. It's an illegal business, but it's a business, and it operates on supply and demand, just like my shop operates on supply and demand. And so a lot of the conversation also has to shift around the demand, making sure people understand what they're clicking online and how they're engaging with individuals, and what they're doing very much has a consequence. And often we are not thinking about the demand side. We don't think about, well, who's buying, right? Like if sex is for sale in our city, that means people are buying it in our city.
What is the biggest driving force behind the demand?
You know, I think, honestly, I think a lot of what I have seen is we have such a cultural demand for sex. You think about the way products are sold, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it could be something non-sexual, like a soda that's sold with a half-naked female.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of it, I think, is cultural. I also believe that the drive and push and the the normalization of pornography is a driving factor, unfortunately. And we see that very often. What somebody starts doing online takes them offline. And so I think that is a huge piece. And then, frankly, we have things like OnlyFans that,
I have heard, yeah,
again, has been normalized as a way that somebody can make money. But what we aren't thinking about is how often those platforms are being used by traffickers, and not only to sell the women, but also to recruit other women. And so a lot of the things that has just become normal, culturally accepted things has laid a foundation for it. And, you know, I do think I remember watching Pretty Woman. You know, this was in the 90s. And it told a story of a woman who chose, she chose to be a prostitute in this Cinderella story of, you know, she falls in love with this rich guy and it's wonderful. And I've heard multiple survivors talk about that those things were the things that glamorized the commercial sex industry. And that was not a true depiction of what it looked like. And what research has told us too, which is really interesting, is about 90% of the commercial sex industry, so that's including pornography, prostitution, strip clubs, so sex for sale, right? That industry, 90% enter through force, fraud, or coercion, which means by law it's human trafficking, or they enter as a minor, which again by law means it's human trafficking. And so these normalized industries in our Western culture has really fueled the fire of human trafficking.
So they take it from a fantasy into it seems like a reality for them.
Yeah, and the reality is not a good one.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so hard because I've never worked with someone who wanted to do that. They always were put in a position where they felt like they didn't have an opportunity and they didn't have a choice. And so I think there's a lot of work to be done in our culture about understanding the commercial sex industry. And we're trying to normalize it. You know, there's this movement to call it sex work and, you know, all these different things. And
sex positive too, is that right?
Yeah. And so it's tough because the messaging, our messaging and our language matters. And I think for young, and it's not just girls. I've said she and her and girls, but, you know, the most recent statistic for trafficking of children, about 36% are boys.
Wow, that's, I'm surprised by that.
Yeah, and it is very surprising. And so I think it's why, you know, one of the things that we do is we bring prevention education in middle schools and high schools, and we have conversations not just about protecting students, which is what we want to happen, but what we really also want to happen is shift and change the way that they're viewing things, they see things. We are challenging cultural norms in a positive way of getting them to really think, what is this doing? If I'm clicking on this image and I'm accessing this, what am I actually supporting?
Wow. What would you say is the youngest age you've heard
of? I have personally served a girl who was not even two yet.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's heartbreaking.
And that was here in our community. And it was another case where her mom had an addiction and she started leveraging her daughter to support her habit. And it was so heartbreaking because, I mean, she wasn't even old enough to talk, but people around the situation were recognizing, hey, something's wrong. Something is off. And so that's the other side is like, yes, we want to prevent trafficking from happening, but we also want to mobilize our community. And so we really encourage people. There's a great training. It's called One Watch. And One Watch is a free digital training. Anybody can do it. And it really talks about, what does this look like? How does this happen? People want it to be a checkbox, right? Like, what are the five things I can look for? Well, trafficking's complicated and situations shift and are different. And so we want people to be educated, because what we often see is, well, all these people saw what was happening, but they didn't really know Because they didn't know. They didn't say anything, right?
Yeah.
So we always say, if you suspect trafficking, we want you to say something. If it's not trafficking, then there's no harm done. But if it is, you know, you could be the key to somebody's freedom. And so OnWatch is such a fantastic tool. It's a survivor-led. It was survivors that helped write the curriculum.
Wow, that's good.
And so that's something that we really, really try to get in the community's hands, because people need to understand what it looks like so then they can be a part of the solution.
Yeah. And then when you do say or see something, what is your next step? I'm sure it covers it in this program.
Yeah. So
you're calling someone.
If it's an emergency situation, mm-hmm. you would act just like any other crime, right? Call 911 and get somebody there immediately. If it's something that is ongoing or a recurring issue that you're seeing, but it's maybe not something that you would call 911. In Virginia, it's #77. That's Virginia State Police. So here in Virginia, we actually have our Virginia State Police has a human trafficking task force.
Wow.
And so it's a coordinated effort across the state, which is fantastic. So we say, please report at #77. If it's a child, we say call state CPS, so Child Protective Services or Department of Social Services. So those are the reporting mechanism. If it's urgent and immediate, you need somebody, 911, to report a tip or an ongoing situation, #77. And then if it's a child, the Department of Social Service or CPS.
Hmm. So how did they find the 2-year-old? Someone reported it.
Yeah, it was being reported.
And now the 2-year-old is getting help,
She's safe. And it's amazing because she is actually placed with a family. Her name has changed and she's being adopted. And I got to see her a couple of weeks ago. And so that's really fun because a lot of my job is hard and heavy and we don't always get to see a happy ending, right? That's what we want. We all want like the happy ending.
Yeah.
And so she's doing incredibly well. And we are so thankful because somebody saw something and they said something and we were able to help advocate for her and we were able to help push to make sure that she had the services that she needed, like counseling, and she's safe in a family now.
That is fantastic. How old is she now?
She is 6 now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I imagine it would take counseling and other support to heal from something like that.
Yeah. You're talking about complex trauma, right? Mm-hmm. Ongoing trauma where the abuser is multiple abusers. And so often when we're serving survivors, it is getting them access to really great counseling. There's really good emerging research around. There's a technique called EMDR.
I'm familiar. I've done some myself.
And so that is something that has been really vital. And so, counseling is so needed and necessary. And you know, we're very passionate about how do we move survivors to success and how do we move them to a better story? Because often what happens when you're a victim of a crime, specifically trafficking, that becomes your identity.
Mm.
And so think about if the worst thing happened to you becomes your identity now. And we don't want that for survivors. We want them to use their story. We have survivors that we've worked with that have changed laws, who have served in the anti-trafficking movement.
That's great.
It's fantastic. But, you know, I often think, okay, but what's next for them? Because that's what I'm really excited about. Not what happened to them and telling that story over and over, but how do we move women forward? And so that's what the shop does. The shop creates opportunities for those coming out of trafficking or vulnerable to trafficking all around the world. You know, we've served over 200 organizations
That's
to market
great.
Their stuff. Isn't that amazing?
Congratulations,
From one organization, you know, at our dining room to all these that are around us. And so it gives women a way to start over. It helps them gain financial freedom. And so our store has always been such a advocate for survivors and them harnessing their creative ability and talents too. And so I love looking around the shop and, you know, seeing the blankets that they make or the candles that they pour or the jewelry
clothing
that I'm wearing.
Too.
That's
cards
really
cards right behind us.
Spinner. And so it's a unique approach, but it's very needed. And the reason it's needed, when we started we had very little understanding because it was a pretty new issue people were trying to combat. But during 2020, research, there was a group called Freedom Business Alliance. So it's a network that we're a part of. And they really focus on businesses that are leveraging business to counteract human trafficking. Mm. So they started doing research and trying to really understand, like, what are the markers for success? How do survivors move out of the cycle of abuse and exploitation? And so one of the things that it showed was 80% of those rescued from trafficking go back into trafficking without a job.
That's what I was reading on your website in prep for this, and I wanted to ask you about that. That is a remarkably sad statistic, quite frankly. And it's, again, comes back to desperation, it sounds like.
Well, and, you know, it's also solvable. That's the thing. When I see things like this, I'm like, if we really put our heads together and try to come up with really great opportunities for survivors, we can prevent that from them being re-exploited. And the other side of a lot of the stats show, you know, if you are trafficked and you have children, the likelihood that they will then too be trafficked is very high. And so I see it as preventative measure for that woman or that individual to not go back into cycles of abuse and exploitation, but also to make sure that doesn't happen to their children. And so I love the idea of how do we create great opportunities for women to thrive and survive, not just survive. Because it's like, oh, well, you know, everybody wants the brothel door kicked down and the rescue. And then what do we think happens after that? Do we think everything is just, you know,
fine? They need a pathway out.
And so we, one of the things that we're very excited about is creating part of our expansion that we're working on this year is to create more opportunities for women that we serve locally. In New Creation, we have walked alongside survivors of trafficking, domestic violence, women coming out of incarceration and addiction. That makes them very vulnerable. Those that have aged out of foster placement, foster care. So we really want to make sure those that are in vulnerable situations have dignified opportunities. So we're going to have a coffee shop and cafe that creates that, which is so exciting.
Yeah.
And then we also really want to create the system of having each person having a mentor. So mentors, if you if you look at the success of women, one of the markers is they have mentors.
Yep.
And so we want to have mentors. We want to have things like financial literacy training.
Oh, that's great.
Really fantastic. Yeah. Things that often we overlook, just because you now have money and you have a job doesn't mean you know how to manage it or budget or understand. So we're trying to pair the job creation piece with also really great life skills.
Do you have, what kind of partners do you have to help provide those resources with your nonprofit?
So we're building that out. Everence, which is so Everence Credit Union, they're going to do financial literacy.
Thank you, Everence.
Yeah, they're amazing. And then we have tons of, you know, one thing that I love about our community is we have so many community supporters here. So many of those are women who will be the mentors of our women and clients that are in the program. And so we're building that out. And then we've really, we want churches to get involved. We want businesses to get involved. We have a couple opportunities. We're still trying to figure it out, but we have a couple opportunities where somebody wants to come in and teach them how to build a resume and how to do job interviews and how to dress for success. So we have a lot of, we're almost overwhelmed by the options. We're just trying to get the building built and then we'll start building the program.
Laughers, she was talking about this building expansion before we recorded, and of course, any monumental project comes with its challenges. And so Sabrina here and her team are walking through those together right now.
And we are tired.
But it's going to come together, you know.
Yeah.
And it'll be worthwhile because of the challenges even more so.
Yeah. And I listened to a message last week and it was like, they said dreams take longer, are harder. You know, he was just talking about like, that's the reality of like, when you're trying to bring a dream to fruition.
Yes.
It's going to be different than you expected. It will take longer. It will be harder, but it will be better. And so I'm like, I'm holding on for the better. Cause right now it's just different and longer and harder. I drink a lot of coffee. I'm tired.
I'd probably drink a lot of Long Island iced tea.
So listen, don't tempt me.
There's a lot of ways that people can help, and I do want to talk about that. Right now, ruminating in my head, though, what is the typical age range of people getting trafficked? Does it bleed into older people, or is it mostly young people?
Yeah, so I have served survivors from less than two above my age. Like,
really?
Yeah, and it's very interesting because now the average age of a sex trafficking victim in the U.S. is 12. So that's a seventh grade middle school student. When I started, it was 16. So it just keeps kind of shifting younger. However, what I will also say is what we've spent most of our time talking about is sex trafficking. But the reality is labor trafficking is a big piece of this issue too. And with labor trafficking, we see that a whole wide range of ages. And so labor trafficking, it's important for us to understand that that's happening in places just like Harrisonburg. We've seen it in restaurants and in agriculture, in construction. And what's challenging about labor trafficking and why that gets underreported is all of those are legal industries, right? If I'm waitressing but not getting any of the money, or somebody's taking all of my money, it's very hard to understand that I don't want to be there and something's wrong. And so labor trafficking is another massive issue. What we mostly focus on is sex trafficking, because that's the typical way that students are being pulled in, is sex trafficking, not labor trafficking. But I would say depending on which type depends on the age range, but I've seen a wide variety of ages.
So are some people, and kids specifically, where are they living when they're trafficked?
That's a great question. So, you know, movies, I think, often depict it's a creepy white van and they get kidnapped and taken somewhere else.
Yeah.
The vast majority, actually, I want to say the percentage is over 70% of trafficking victims are exploited in their own community. So when you hear the term trafficking, you're thinking about movement of people, right?
Right.
Or movement of
I think of 18-wheelers and packed with people, and
that's a pretty rare circumstance. It's typically often happening in their own community. Traffickers are typically, if it's not a family member, it's somebody that they trust. So often what happens is it's a boyfriend who builds a relationship in order to exploit. So he's building a relationship and he's building trust in order to then manipulate and exploit. And so a lot of times they're in their homes. There are also a lot of stats around runaways. So teenagers who run away, often it's trafficking situations. It's they're running away to be with their boyfriend, right? Mm-hmm. They're running away from, and typically they're running away from a hard situation at home. We see a high vulnerability of children in our foster care system. So if a trafficker is able to build that relationship and earn that trust, and then they're really great at pitching whatever the promise of a better life it looks like for Dawn. You know, they'd figure out, oh, Dawn wants to be a comedian. So then if I can, you know, they build that into their pitch for that child to leave. And so it is very rarely kidnapping. It is most often somebody who already is connected to that child or somebody who builds a relationship. And again, that's a solvable, if we are adamant about having great conversations and teaching students what trafficking looks like, that's solvable. If somebody wants to kidnap me, other than me just packing on more weight, there's not a whole lot that I can do, right?
Right.
I mean, like the reality of kidnapping is kind of challenging to understand, well, how do I keep that from happening? But if it is somebody building a relationship, if there are markers, if there are specific grooming tactics, because those are the things we're teaching in schools, that is a preventable crime. We can have really solid conversations that shift and change. So to date, New Creation has helped connect over 15,000 students in our community up and down. We pretty much are up and down the 81 corridor. And so that brings me hope, because if it can be prevented, that's powerful. It changes everything.
It does change everything. Let's just say a young person is watching this right now and they say, oh my goodness, that is my situation. Mm-hmm. I do not know how to get out of it. Mm-hmm. What would you advise them to do?
Yeah. So if you or somebody you know mm-hmm. is in the situation, we always say reach out that #77, reach out to Virginia State Police. There's also a human trafficking hotline that we can give you to put in the show notes. So the human trafficking hotline is another really great tool that can be used. I always say go to a trusted adult. Mm. You know, if somebody is, you know, even somebody that's making you feel uncomfortable, asking you things that you aren't comfortable with. I mean, we have, I don't even know if you've ever heard of this term, but we have something called sextortion.
No.
Okay. So sextortion is when somebody essentially says, okay, you give me a nude image. And if you don't, I'm going to say this or I'm going to do this.
I see.
So it's a coercion of a nude image, or it's a nude image that's given freely by a child. And then that nude image is used in saying, okay, if you don't do X, Y, Z, I'm going to send this to everybody. I'll send it to your parents. I'll post it online. And so cases of sextortion doesn't always mean that it by definition meets the criteria for human trafficking, but it is a tactic that's normalized. When we're in middle school students are telling us this happens all the time with peers, peer on peer, you know, that this is something that's happening. And so even situations like that, if a student were to find themselves in a situation where they were uncomfortable, go to a trusted adult. If it isn't your family member, go to a counselor, a teacher, a coach, a neighbor. You know, one of the practices that I remember one year, it was right before COVID hit, and I was in a class. And it was, I want to say it was middle school students. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, everybody think of three safe adults. If somebody were to be making you uncomfortable, putting mm-hmm. you in a bad situation, I want you to think of three safe adults. Well, I didn't give them the caveat, don't yell them out, but they just started yelling them out.
Okay.
One of the things that I could not erase from my memory is there wasn't a student in there that said a parent. It was this teacher, this coach, it was somebody within their school. Those kids felt the most safe with the people at school. And so when school started shutting down and all of that happened, my heart was so overwhelmed with grief, thinking how many vulnerable students are now taken out of that security net. And you know, that is a sad thought of there are a lot of kids that don't feel safe at home and don't feel like the safe adult is somebody related to them. And so I would say get a safe, trusted adult involved, reach out to law enforcement, reach out at that human trafficking hotline, and make sure you are able to disclose what's going on. Because it's also preventable, and there are things that we can do to help.
Yeah, those are some very complex issues. So am I hearing that these people that are being trafficked are living life in front of us? Is that why it's hard to really see what's happening, because they're going to school and then they're being trafficked when they're not in school, and then they go back to school the next day? So they're really threaded into our daily life.
And they often say that trafficking is hidden in plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
And so now there are cases absolutely where we have seen them removed from their family, removed mm-hmm. from their community, and trafficked all over, right? Those things happen. But often it is people who are in our everyday lives, who are going to school, who are, you know, part of daily routines, and this is happening. Mm-hmm. And so the other side that I think is worth pointing out is when this is happening and it's somebody, the perpetrator is a family member, mm-hmm. often those children think that's normal. If that is your family unit and that's how this is entering your life, they don't often have the language. It's very rare that survivors of trafficking self-identify. Mm-hmm. It is it's still a pretty new topic.
Mm-hmm.
Human trafficking, our very first legislation in this country was 2000. It's mm-hmm. only 25 years ago. It's really not that long. And then in Virginia, it was 2015. And so a lot of it is like, that's why community awareness is important. That's why mm-hmm. things like a podcast for people to understand
good.
It's important. Prevention education in our schools is important, because most victims are not in a situation of, oh, I'm
That's
a victim
me.
Of human trafficking. Right.
They don't know what to call
right.
it.
Right.
That's such an important point. It gets me emotional thinking about my own sexual abduction when I was young, and I was just 19, and I didn't know for the longest time that's what it was. You know, it didn't have a word for it, or I just didn't really realize that until therapy years later. You know, I started a big therapy journey 4 years ago, the EMDR. And so some of the things that you're saying really resonate, that grooming aspect, because my attacker was building trust with me first. And that is ultimately how I ended up in a compromising situation. And thankfully, I'm alive today because...
And you see how how those, they just move your comfort level just enough, right? And so it's, and it's very interesting too. I'm so sorry that that happened to you.
I wasn't expecting to share that.
And that's a, but you know, I think often we want to believe that this issue happens to somebody. And we tell ourselves all kinds of narratives to make ourselves feel safe. That it happens to somebody over there.
Not going
to
happen to me.
Or somebody I love.
I certainly didn't think that was going to happen that night at all.
Yeah. And so I think it's also good for us to recognize that how common it can be. You know, and predators are predators. And the way that they act, it is, they are manipulators. They are
very
deceptive.
So.
They have a sixth sense of being able to find the vulnerability to tap into. I mean, that's what they do. And it is crazy to me as I look back, you know, and see all the different women that I've served. And their stories are all different. But I can almost pinpoint, okay, that's the vulnerability that they used and leveraged. This is how they earned and were able to build trust. And often, and this is with sexual abuse across the board, almost all sexual abuse, this, the issue that is almost implanted in a survivor is it's my fault. And so it's hard to get help and it's hard to ask for help when that lie is planted that I did something wrong or I deserve this or I asked for this.
I could have prevented this.
I shouldn't have gotten the car. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's another really unique aspect when we're thinking, well, why don't they just leave or why don't they just ask for help? It's very... It's complex. And
it
even though
complex.
They're not chained up in a basement the way movies portray it or, you know, held in a cage, the mental manipulation, that's where the chains are. It's on their, it's mental and it's very emotionally hard to break away. And so, yeah, I think it's important for us to make sure we are not victim shaming and blaming, which happens often.
Yeah.
And I hear, well, why don't they, you know, what they should just leave? Why don't they just tell somebody? Well, it's just not that simple.
No, I think also, too, you don't know what to do when you find yourself in that situation and you're in your assailant, your attacker. I don't know how you phrase or what you call them. Is that the appropriate words? Okay.
Perpetrator.
Yeah. They can present differently with other people and with their victim right there. Where other people would be like, oh, there's everything's fine here.
And that brings up a really good point, Dawn. Yeah. I worked with a survivor who was trafficked here. Her trafficker lives in the city. She would not disclose who it was. And you know what she said to me? Nobody would believe me anyway because he's so well-liked. He's so well-known. And nobody would believe he's a pimp or a trafficker. They see him as who he presents himself to be. And so I think that's another really, I mean, this is a... It's a very interesting, the issue of trafficking is very complex and it's very interesting when you look at the dynamics. Usually there's such a power dynamic of it being an adult or a child or somebody who does have support and looks a certain way and are really able to convince the public of one truth and have a very different thing going on the other side of them.
Yeah, and I think you bring up some really great points too about not the victims. You know, the thought, oh, why didn't they just get out of there? Or why didn't they just get leave? Or the abused women, they're getting hit every day. Why don't they leave? There's some very complicated issues I learned in my own healing that goes back to your childhood experiences and the fight, flight, and freeze response. And how that yourself as a child responded to different little traumas or big traumas or stress based on what you would naturally do. And some people are going to naturally freeze. Some people are going to naturally fight. And some people are going to freeze. When you're a child, it's hard to fight because you're so young and so vulnerable. So you tend to freeze. You either tend to shut down. You know,
well, and when I learned about ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, so the very first time I sat in a training, I kept thinking, this has got to be correlated with human trafficking, because those adverse childhood experiences really build in certain vulnerabilities for certain populations. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, again, I think that's why so much of the work to fight against trafficking is building healthy, safe communities, having mm-hmm. healthy, safe conversations, creating environments where kids can thrive and feel safe. But it's hard because so many of the things that are hurting and harming kids are starting at home. You know, mm-hmm. so many of those things that may not be trafficking, but then set them up to be very vulnerable to someone, to an abuser. It's hard because it is preventable, but it mm-hmm. takes a lot of work in the community of how do we have good foundational starts for kids. So ACE scores at all, but, you know, to some degree, some of those things, it feels very hard and overwhelming. But I keep thinking, for me, I have to see where's the hope and how can we usher in the hope? And it's prevention. It's the preventative side.
I think that is absolutely 150% correct, because our brain has the beautiful capacity of neuroplasticity. So if you had ACEs in your childhood that puts you in this vulnerable position where you end up getting trafficked or go through something horrible, there is hope and healing mm-hmm. to the point also you can change your neuroplasticity and remove that freeze response and have a healthy response, because now you have boundaries and you have healed and you think you're going to be vulnerable at first while you're healing to another situation like that. But what you learn is that you will no longer be vulnerable to that situation once you mentally heal. Yeah.
And what I see often, you know, the survivors that I have served, they have such a desire to help ensure mm-hmm. this does not happen to someone else. And so I think there's something really beautiful about the thing that is the most painful and has hurt and harmed us often becomes the thing that compels us to help other people. And so I'm a survivor of domestic violence mm-hmm. and I have sexual abuse in my past. And so those are two things that in the moment felt like they were going to legitimately in my life in moments. I was like, I'm just never going to be able to get out of this. And if I do, what's next? And now I can look back and see, mm-hmm. oh, those things are how I have incredible empathy for the women that I serve. I don't understand what it's like to be trafficked, but a lot of the things that made them vulnerable, I have in my story. Mm-hmm. And so I can understand why I didn't just leave. I understand why I think the stat is you leave 9 times before you get out of domestic violence. Mm. And so, you know, it's great when I can use my trauma for good.
Yeah.
You know, and I can see it as, oh, I do understand this in a different way. And I'm empathetic and compassionate because of the way that trauma has affected my life and your life, obviously, too. And I think that often we believe the lie that this horrible thing, we can't move past it, which mm-hmm. science is proving that's not true.
That's not true, I can tell you.
You can heal. And there are so many ways in which you can heal. But on the other side, I'm like, what if we saw those adverse traumas, the bad things, what if we saw those as pathways to help somebody else?
Yeah, I agree with that. There is something so beautiful about somebody saying that they understand. And when they say it, just hearing it, you know if they really do or not. Yeah. And it's because they have gone through something similar or parts of it. And then it's just this innate hope that you hear in your soul and your spirit, I believe. And when somebody really understands, you know if they do.
Yeah, and it's nice to just not have to explain, right?
Yeah.
Somebody to just get it And we actually, a few weeks ago, I was at an anti-trafficking conference, and a large population of the attendees were survivors. And, had a lot of conversations. A lot of them were sharing from the main stage, and they were the teachers, which is important. If we are not valuing the voices of survivors and letting them speak into the work that we're doing, we need to severely reevaluate how we're working. And so I loved how many survivors they platformed, and so many of the conversations that I had, I think it was just nice to be in a space where we all understood the issue, and it was just baseline. We all understand, right? Like there's a common passion that we have to eradicate this issue, and there's something of like we baseline get it, whether we're advocates in the space or survivors. I think that was just, sometimes it's exhausting. This is a very hard, heavy issue, and I think a lot of us get burned out because it's hard to hold on to the hope.
Mm-hmm. With so many sad stories. Yeah, I think there's a lot of room for healing for ourselves and our communities and our world. We're just, we've been through some stuff together, most recently with the pandemic. Did the human trafficking increase during the pandemic? Do we have any stats on that?
Yes, it greatly increased. And honestly, it changed. Now, there was always a high level of trafficking happening online, but we saw the recruitment and selling just went through the roof. And I mean, some of the stats were shocking. I mean, we're talking like 110% increase on social media, on Facebook specifically. And I remember, we were weeks into the pandemic, and I was on a call with the State Department, and they were saying, like, I think they were estimating about a 40% increase.
That seems low from what you just told me, though.
Yeah, it seemed high in the moment. I'm like, 40%. And then to see, actually, it exponentially increased. And part of it is the idea of people are isolated. Mm-hmm. There was, to some degree, all of us felt discomfort. Mm-hmm. There was instability in a lot of people's economic, what's going to happen to my job?
Uncertainty. Anxiousness, depression, loneliness.
So all of those things can create a vulnerability in somebody, right? Mm-hmm. And so, honestly, we have seen over and over and over how not just the selling of sex, but the recruitment of victims often is happening first. They're first engaging, like I said, a family member. But if it's a stranger that's building a relationship, right now with females, the top is TikTok and Instagram. Mm. With boys, it's games. So gaming devices.
Gaming. It's going through gaming too.
Yeah, because you're connected to like-minded individuals, you're playing a game, you're building a relationship. And so anywhere that that's happening where somebody can build a relationship with a child, it can be very dangerous. And so that's why we really have to understand social media literacy. We as parents need to understand how those things shift and change. Mm. When I had this conversation, somebody said, what do you mean gaming? And I'm like, they're PlayStations. They're connected to the internet and they're talking to people that they don't know. Well, they didn't even realize that was part of the technology. Mm. When we played Nintendo, we were playing with whoever had the other controller. We were not playing with...
They have different handles and they can talk to each other while they're playing. I've learned that too.
Yeah. And so I think because technology is shifting and changing, we've got to stay engaged as parents to understand how it's shifting and changing. And not, I am not anti-social media. I'm not anti-technology. I think those things have a powerful platform in place. I think when they're abused and mishandled is where real huge opportunities for exploitation happen. Mm-hmm. And so I think we just have to be engaged and be able to have good conversations with our children and with those that are in our lives, because often a student is not thinking, the person on the other side of this laptop or my phone or my gaming device, we don't think they pose an issue or, are unsafe the way that somebody who shows up in our life, particularly when we keep pushing this idea that it's somebody in a van that's going to snatch us.
That's the image I kind of had in my head, too. Mm-hmm. So the people that are predators through these social media outlets, I guess similarly, are grooming and establishing trust, and then one thing leads to another, and now the next thing they know, they're trafficked.
Yep, correct. So a lot of the same grooming tactics that are used by any perpetrator, that's what they're using. And they are able to build relationship. And, you know, I heard a survivor say one time, and it was like, it just shocked me. She said, my trafficker was the best listener in my life.
Wow.
And I thought, first of all, I was scary because I'm thinking to myself, well, he was the best listener because he was trying to gain information, right? He was asking questions and he was building a case against her to be able to exploit her. Mm-hmm. But I do think it says something about that our human nature is we want to be seen and heard and loved and known.
We really validated. Want to be known. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so if the child is not in a safe family relationship, or even if they are, but they don't feel seen and heard and loved. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're a teenager, I don't think I felt seen and heard and loved, right? Like, you know,
it's part of being a teenager in the best of circumstances, even the emotional maturity continuum.
And so those are the ways that traffickers are able to build those relationships and build those connections that then enable them to push boundaries that are so unhealthy. I think, again, it's a preventable issue, but I think we have to dispel myths and misconceptions and really lean into great preventative education and then community awareness and engagement.
Yeah, I think that is so key. It seems to me another important piece of the prevention would be teaching the young people how to create healthy boundaries for themselves.
Yeah, and actually, you know, part of what I love about our prevention education is called the Prevention Project. And so talks a lot about social media literacy, cultural norms, you know, healthy relationships, things like that. But the other thing that I love is it's really also demand reduction, because we aren't just trying to prevent. We absolutely 100% don't. We never want this to happen to a child. We want to prevent it from happening. But remember what I talked about. If it's a business and you're not going after the demand, you're actually not going after the root. And so the other side is healthy boundaries on both sides, the way in which we should engage on both sides. And so we often aren't thinking about, we want to make sure that students understand and know what we click on, the way that we're engaging and what we do matters. And often what we're doing online drives us offline to things that we often would never think we could participate in, because that's a boundary too. You know, when you're engaging with, and pornography now is so violent. I mean, it is unbelievable when I'm sitting in trainings hearing the things that are the top searches. And so those things create, they lessen your boundary and they push you in, they put you in positions that you would never think that you would be a part of. You know, if you asked, you know, took a survey of men, who wants to be a part of the issue? Like, who wants to be driving the demand for sex trafficking? Nobody's going to say yes to that.
That's me. They're not thinking about that when they're using.
Nope.
Yeah.
And it is an addiction, actually. There's a really great tool and resource. There's an organization called Fight the New Drug.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
So I love them, and they really talk about the science behind and getting people to understand why pornography is very much an addiction and why, when you're consuming it, what it does to you as a consumer, not just the person on the other side, but that's you as a consumer, and the way in which it really radically changes us for the worst.
It does, because it releases dopamine in your mind, you know, and then it takes more shock factor to release the dopamine than the previous time.
Exactly. And then you get to the point where nothing online will satisfy that hit. And then you end up offline and you end up purchasing a person. And you wouldn't think, you know,
that you would ever.
You would never think you would do it.
It's a crab or the frog in the boiling water. You just, you know, slowly, and the next thing you know, you're cooked.
Yeah. And that's why when we, when we started talking about, we wanted to buy this building, when it got taken by the Commonwealth's attorney, I remember sending Marsha Garst an email, our Commonwealth's attorney, and said, hey, I really want to buy that building.
She's probably like, what? Are you out your mind?
She still thinks I'm out of my mind. I'm pretty sure. I love her. But she, you know, and part of why I was so adamant that it, you know, this is not a great shopping location. We're on the south side of the city. This is not where you go to buy a gift. We're a destination. But it was so important for us, for me, to send a message about the pornography industry and the ways in which it's damaging our culture. Mm-hmm. And if we can reuse, repurpose this to do good and tell a better story, that was really important to me because I wanted people to see the correlation between the two. And often we overlook it because it's socially normal. We don't want to talk about it because it is so widespread and so many people are engaging in it. And so it's very important. Our building is such a part, a big part of our story.
Yeah, the new creation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is the new creation.
It's the new creation. I think you hit on something there with the porn use. It's not thinking about the ramifications and implications that it has on your community and globally. It seems to me it's more the thought of, hey, I'm just having some fun.
Yeah.
Versus, this is has way more of a ripple effect than you realize.
And you think about that with so many of the things that we engage with, that we feel we're telling ourselves the story that it is only affecting us, when the reality is it is very rare that anything we do only affects us. You know, we talk about it on the purchasing side too. You know, our clothing is made by somebody, and that somebody matters. And, you know, I think about pornography as the instant gratification of a sexual desire. Well, so is Temu and Shein. It's an instant gratification of a shopping addiction, right? And those two specifically, and I could name lots more, but those two specifically, they are enslaving people to make the goods that we're buying. And so, you know, when I saw last year the most downloaded app in our country was Temu, like my heart just dropped because I'm like, this is also fueling human trafficking. It's just fueling it on the labor side. And so, you know, often when I talk about pornography and the way that pornography is fueling human trafficking, if you're not engaged in that, you're like, yeah. But then when I start talking about, well, what you're clicking and buying on Amazon and shopping fast fashion and cheap fashion, that's fueling labor trafficking. Then people get real touchy. Because you don't want to know that what you're doing online is affecting somebody else. And it is.
Yeah.
And it isn't to bring guilt and shame. It's to bring awareness and it's to call us higher. You know, if something is costing, if I buy a dress for $5, well, how do we think that dress is being made?
Mm.
And so that's the other side too, that often we're trying to get people to engage with the idea of buying fair and ethical. So shopping at places like New Creation and 10,000 Villages and places that are ensuring people are being paid, or shopping second, like Thrifted. If you can't buy it, please, whatever you do, don't buy fast fashion, because fast fashion is fueling the demand for more people to be enslaved to make those products that sell really fast. And so, you know, instant gratification in our country is part of it's a root cause of what it is, why it's growing so rapidly and why it's making so much money.
The labor trafficking that you're talking about is happening here in the U.S. as well.
Yes. Yeah, so we actually, Harrisonburg, one of our very first cases of human trafficking was a labor trafficking case that happened at a restaurant here in Harrisonburg, right behind the Valley Mall. And now what was so interesting is they were going back. The couple was from a different country. They were going back to their country, pitching the American dream. I can get you here. I can give you a place to stay. You can have a job. Those things were true-ish. They did give them a place to stay and they did give them the job. But however, they were making about the equivalent of $1.05 an hour. Mm. So they were being paid, but way under minimum wage. They did not have access to their paperwork. Mm. They were not able to come and go as they pleased. They were all living in the same home. And so it was fraud and coercion, essentially, mm-hmm. that led them. They were working in a restaurant. That's not an illegal industry, right? Mm-hmm. And so we absolutely have it in our country. And I've seen it in industries, you know, like restaurants and nail salons. And we've seen it in factories and plants. We've seen it in construction and agriculture. And so the other thing that people need to understand about labor trafficking in that case, it wasn't that they weren't making any money. Mm-hmm. They were. Mm-hmm. It was just the situations and circumstances that led to them not being paid fairly and not having, I mean, really the ability to leave if they wanted to. Mm. We see it with domestic servitude. So nannies and housekeepers.
Really?
And so labor trafficking, even though statistically, typically if you look at reported cases in the U.S., mm-hmm. high 80%+ are usually sex trafficking cases. I think we have just as much labor trafficking in the U.S. as we have sex trafficking. It's just in industries where it's a legal industry and it's harder to pick up on it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think post-pandemic, since we seem to be, at least from the coronavirus, not that it's not here. Once it's here, it's going to be here, a virus. And I'm not trying to minimize that. My point is, now that we're merging more into daily living since before 2020, do you see the numbers going down or did it shoot up and stay up?
I have not seen, so in the 13 years I've been doing anti-trafficking, I have not seen one single statistic, not a single number drop. Mm. The only number that's reduced has been the average age of a victim. Every other number, how much money is made, how many victims are affected, it just keeps growing. You know, and it is hard because it's hard to stay the course when you're working in an issue that just keeps growing. Mm. And so I think the awareness piece and getting people, and you know, my heart is never to shame somebody. You know, my heart is not to shame somebody if they do have a pornography addiction. My heart is not to shame them if they're wearing a dress from Shein. Like, I want people to come close and be invited to a better story mm-hmm. for themselves too. Like, mm-hmm. it's a better story for you and for the person who's on the other side of the screen or the other side of the item. What happens often, and I would say, I mean, I have definitely done this wrong in the past, is we get passionate about an issue. And so we start talking about it in ways that does feel like condemnation. And it's mm-hmm. hard to get people to come close. And, you know, I see it in the ethical world, the fair trade world often is we have used shame mm-hmm. to try to get people to change a habit. And shame is not a good way mm-hmm. to modify a behavior.
No.
Yeah. So we have a lot of work to do, a lot of, you know, and I think that's what I love about the shop. It invites people to come close. It's also beautiful and it's fun. And we try really hard. I mean, people have asked me about our social media before, like we do really, really ridiculous reels and, you know, just we try to have fun and we laugh and we do it purposefully, even the way that we have branded and are bright and light. And all of that is with the psychology behind what lets people come close.
Yeah.
So if it's dark and scary and we're using images that are like, I don't want to come
close
to that.
That's not inviting.
Right.
It's very,
And if somebody's shaking their finger at me for the ways in which I'm contributing to the issue, that also is not inviting. Mm-mm. And so anytime we're talking about, hey, these are the ways that we are part of the issue without knowing it, but here's a better solution.
Yeah.
And so I'm very excited. One of the things I'm working on right now is it's called Put Mercy in Your Marketing. And so I go to all these events and get these t-shirts and these bags and stress balls and, you know, all these things that you get in promotional branding.
Yeah.
And so many of those are made in China and they're not being made, you know, ethically. And so I kept complaining about it. And then I really felt pretty convicted. And I'm like, if I'm going to complain about it, I'm going to make a solution. So we're really working on a solution for businesses, nonprofits, events of there are ethical products that are fantastic. Mm-hmm. That yes, you might invest a little bit more in the making, but you can feel good that they are aligning with your heart and your impact. And so I'm very excited to be able to do t-shirts and hats and coffee and chocolate and all those things that restore dignity and mm-hmm. create opportunity and really get us thinking about the way in which are our actions aligning with our heart and our mm-hmm. values. That's really what, you know, because that's what I want to be known for. I want to be known for somebody who aligns her values and her practices. They're the same.
Yeah. You're doing it.
I'm trying. Sometimes I'm doing it.
You're doing it, Sabrina.
Except when I say I really want to lose weight and I eat at Taco Bell. I did that last week. So sometimes my values do not align.
You go to Taco Bell, I go to Five Guys.
Listen, we all have our vices. Mine is a cheesy gordita crunch, which they took off the menu. I'm very upset about it. If you know anybody at Taco Bell.
I've done cookout. I've been there.
I love food.
I am too. I'm a big foodie. A big foodie. You're going to do the coffee and the chocolate. I want to talk about what we have in here right now. And so someone visits your shop. They're going to purchase, hopefully, something that they really enjoy and think is going to be a blessing to them. What kinds of things can they buy here? And then your nonprofit, does all or most of the proceeds go to further this mission?
Yeah,
back to the artisans, I guess, to pay them? How does that all work?
Yeah, that's a great question. Okay, yeah. So what they can find here, we are a gift shop. So really, we try to focus on items that are great for gifting to yourself or others. Everything from candles to home decor, baskets, blankets, rugs. We have tons of jewelry. One of my favorite items are their purses from India.
Yeah, I was looking at those. Yeah, I was going to say something if you didn't.
Yeah, one bag creates 12 artisan jobs. One bag.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so all of our stuff has a story, which I love. And so if I'm in here, I could walk you around and just say, you know, this is what this does. But a lot of our stuff has it on the tag, so you can read about what that item does. And so think gift shop with the best, most amazing impact that it could have. We always call it shop and do good. So that's, you know, what we have at our shop. We do have an online store. We even have a free app that people can search New Creation VA in their app store.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and download our app. And I do live sales, which I think my dad meant it as a burn, but we started them during the pandemic.
Live sales. And he could not understand.
So my mom's like, pulls it up and he's like, oh, it's like QVC. And I'm like, yes, that's great.
That's what you mean by live sales.
Yeah, so it's I get on, we talk about this dress.
On your Facebook?
It's actually in our app. So you can watch it on Facebook, but you have to have our app to be able to purchase from our QVC-ish sale.
Your own show.
Our own little show. Yeah, it's very, and it's a great way. We actually did it during the pandemic when the shop was closed. It was a way for us to connect and sell products. We didn't, people couldn't come in the store. And so the thing that's beautiful is every artisan group, they're the one who sets the price of their stuff. So New Creation does not say, we'll give you X amount of dollars for this hat. They say this
the
is,
hat
yes.
is X amount of dollars.
And so most of it, it's about 50% of all of the profits go back to the artisan. And it depends. It's anywhere between 45 and 60% of each product. So it's kind of a sliding scale. To date, $1.4 million has went to artisans around the world to create those opportunities. So our shop is part of our organization, and 100% of everything that we do is pouring back into our mission. And so we take the funds from our shop and put it right back into our mission, whether it's prevention education, community awareness, serving and connecting local survivors to resources, or helping establish new opportunities. It's all going right back in.
That's incredible. So you can contribute and make impact by shopping here. You can donate, I imagine. If somebody wanted to do that, what would they do?
Yeah, so we are a 501c3, and so that's a great question. People will say, oh, but you have a business. Yes, but we are a nonprofit. And so if somebody wants to give, you can visit us at newcreationva.com or .org. You'll find us at either. And we have a donate button right there.
Okay. And then if they wanted, is there a way to get involved to volunteer or work here or help with prevention?
Yeah. So currently we do not have a volunteer program back yet. We had a huge thriving volunteer program pre-COVID. And what happened once we shut down is, you know, we had to really start paying everybody. People didn't want to work, much less volunteer. Mm-hmm. So we were really, we shifted our focus and everybody on staff is paid. We will re-engage with volunteers with the expansion because once we opened back up, we didn't have space. We really started growing, as strange as it sounds. We grew during the pandemic, our resources last year in our prevention and awareness, our schools more than doubled. So we're in eight school districts now. And so we just need more staff. And so staff takes up, well, you saw. We, guys, we tried to shoot this in my office. It's a closet. And we were like, this is probably not going to be great. We should go downstairs.
And here we are.
So you see what? We have a real space deficit. So once we have our expansion and we have a warehouse, we will bring volunteers back. Our hope is to bring our interns back. So yeah, hopefully in the future, people can stay tuned. Also, when you visit our website, they can sign up for our newsletter. Mm-hmm. Our newsletter is free. We won't spam you. We send weekly emails about what's going on, how people can engage and what they can do.
Yeah. Before we close out here, I see too, faith is a big impetus for you in getting involved in this and starting this and growing this. How has it helped you when you face your challenges in doing the work that you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality for me is without my faith, I just don't think I could stay in this. It's just so overwhelming and it's so hard. And if it's up to me, we're in big trouble, you know? And so I think recognizing that the God of the universe, one of my, you know, there's so many names for God, but I love the God who sees. That's Elroy. That's the God who sees. And I think the God who sees is brings comfort to me knowing, one, he sees those that are victimized. And he doesn't turn away. He very much sees them. And then on the other side, my heart for justice is very strong, and knowing he's the God who sees, and is he's the God of justice, and he does bring ultimate justice, even when I don't see it on the side, even when it does not look like it's going to unfold that way, not here on earth. I think that is what helps me, stay in a very hard issue, because, you know, his love for me and us being able to express his love for others is really powerful. And I love hearing how so many of the survivors that I serve, their faith is what has helped them hold on. You know, because sometimes I get angry. I'm like, Lord, you see, this world is so broken. And there's so many situations that are just not right. And it's hard for me to grasp in my human mind, like, how can all this exist? And then I'm reminded, you know, my job, I can't fix it all, but my job is, how do I bring the kingdom here in this moment, in this place, in this school with this survivor? How do I bring the kingdom, and how do I bring justice, which is just making wrong things right? And so trying to focus on that versus getting bitter and angry. And I have definitely been there before, of being bitter and angry, but it doesn't serve me well. And it actually doesn't serve the women that I walk with well. And so when I can hold on to hope and point to something much bigger than this moment in time and myself, that I think is what has compelled us at New Creation to stay put, because it would be, frankly, easier for me to leave all this behind and go back to the corporate world where things are not so hard and I make a lot more money.
In case you didn't hear that, in the corporate world where she could make a lot more money.
And so, yeah. And I am.
You're making the heavenly bucks.
That's right. Storing up my treasures in heaven. It's going to be so good.
I think the most priceless things, quite frankly, are the things that you cannot buy, you know?
You know, and honestly, I think about often legacy. You know, I have two daughters.
Absolutely.
And I have a granddaughter now.
Oh, she's, congratulations.
She's so sweet. And it's, you know, I think the older that I get and the longer that I've been just on earth, but, you know, in this very, very hard issue, I think a lot about, what's your legacy? What are you doing now? How will that change your world for the better or for the worse, unfortunately, right? Like, we're going to shift one way or another. And so I'm very proud of the legacy that we're building.
Like, it should be.
So proud of this team. And just our ability to keep at it consistently, and then also the creative ways that we have figured out how to compel people to join us, because we can't do it alone. Even this team, as talented and wonderful as we are and our combined giftings, the reality is the shop would not exist if people were not coming and shopping, and we would not be in schools, and we would not be serving survivors. We would not have that impact if people weren't writing us checks. And so the legacy of what New Creation gets to do is driven by, I hope, the legacy of Harrisonburg, that yeah. we saw this issue. It is horrific, but we did something. We weren't people who just complained about it, or people that were fearful and pretended that it didn't happen. We came close and we did something that hopefully will change a lot of lives.
I think it will change a lot of lives. It already is in your 12 years. I think we can do this, Laffers. I think we can make this world a better place. And your point of education and awareness and prevention is exactly what is needed the most. People understanding the impact of their choices, the responsibility of role modeling to our young people by the choices that we make, and doing a deeper dive on the ripple effect of what we might think is a harmless choice, but in fact is very harmful.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. We can do this, Laffers. So we're going to put all this awesome information in the show notes. I will email you and get that. But before we wrap up here, how best can the Laffers like stay in touch with you and connect with you and come shop here and follow you on social media and all the yeah. things?
So if you're local or anywhere drivable, one of my favorite things is when people drive all over. We had somebody from Alaska here a couple months ago who is a shopper online, and she was here stateside, which was so cool. So she came in and shopped. So we're at 3051 South Main Street in Harrisonburg. We also have a pop-up at Liberty Street Mercantile, which is downtown from Magpie. Yep. So you can shop with us in person. You can connect with us on all forms of social media at New Creation VA. Make sure, don't put an S. Everybody wants to put an S. New Creation VA on all social media platforms. You can download our app by searching your app store for New Creation. And then you can engage with us online at New Creation VA. You can also, and I already know I mentioned this, but make sure you sign up for our newsletter. That's the greatest way to stay updated. Sometimes you miss things on social media. Algorithm gets thrown off and you don't see it. And so if you really want to stay up to date with who, what we're doing, where we're going to be, how you can be involved, sign up for our newsletter.
I say the same thing yeah. about our what we're doing. That is, it's a hit and miss with the social media.
Sure
so
is.
I agree with that. Get on our newsletter. And thank you for joining us today, Sabrina, and sharing with us all things New Creation and the impact that you and your team are having positively on our community. It's truly been a pleasure, and I learned so much today. So thank you for sharing.
Yeah, thank you so much, and thanks for connecting me to your Laffers.
I know, they're amazing. We came at you with a little harder topic today,
yeah.
but I think the addressing the harder topics actually is part of our complicated lives and world. And we need to know about them if we truly want to together make a big difference. So I want to thank all of you for joining in today and learning more about human trafficking, what you can do about it if you are a victim of it, what you can do for yourself. I hope this has impacted you in some way and you've walked away learning something. And I want to thank you for following this podcast. From the bottom of my heart, we are growing, and we are growing because of you. It is I'm in awe of what you're doing and how you're helping. So if you like this content today, you think it'll be helpful to someone, please like it, share it, tell a friend about it, follow us. We'd appreciate that. And also don't forget to grab that free audiobook from Audible. That is going to be amazing. And then when you sign up for a free trial, then that helps us support our podcast and get more great content out like this and more wonderful guests like Sabrina. So thank you again. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, Laffers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womacks and Friends. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to a FWAF show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to thefunnywomacks.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend, and until next time, cheers.